next session. Thank you very much. So we're going to open up the floor for questions. So please feel free to have a question for any of the four presentations that came this morning. So first question.
Well, maybe I don't need it, but this is to Sophie. Very interesting presentation. I'd like you to ask to elaborate on your one of your bullet points where you said demand for social rating from investors. Can you expand on that?
Sure. One of the business lines that Planet Finance Group has developed over 10 years is Planet Rating. Planet Rating is an agency that rates microfinance institutions on the financial level. So it's a credit rating agency. And in the past three, four years, they've seen an increased demand for social rating. And they've developed a similar methodology than the one they have for financial ratings. And basically, what they're looking for is, what's the social goal that MFI is trying to achieve? So if you're trying to increase the level of credit among rural entrepreneurs, how many of those entrepreneurs have you reached? Have you designed a credit product that is that meets their need? Are they satisfied with the product? Are you measuring their satisfactions? So it's an entire set of elements that they're rating to measure the social progress, the social performance, and the social impact. Social performance is becoming one of the metrics that's more and more looked at by investors.
So it would be custom designed for MFI, or is
it? It's whatever the target, whatever your target population is at the beginning of your program, at the onset of your program, and say, I want to reach 85% of women in this area for one given MFI.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, and it's either investors who are asking for it, or MFIs who are asking us to rate them on a social level because they know that it's going to increase their chance of raising funds on the capital markets.
Would there be a opportunity for a global rating index?
So the Social Performance Task Force is working on that, and maybe we can have a sidebar conversation about it.
Just to pursue on this idea, I think that the notion of mainstreaming those business that are with social goals, the more we move toward having metrics that can become mainstream, moving along, whether it can develop a social index that could be applied not just for microfinance, but maybe finance in general. I was talking to Emmanuel Faber when at the Grameen Berlin meeting last week or the week before, and Emmanuel, who is the CEO of Danone International. And he was talking about the fact that Danone has started this social business that most likely Hans may be talking about. But Danone has now moved in terms of giving their bonus on the basis of three performance, one-third economic, one-third social, one-third sustainability. And you start kind of having metrics like this, including in the banking system, and I think that you start to change the world most likely, and I think that that's the more we move in that direction, I think it's quite promising.
Thank you. I had a question for Sophie and also from our colleagues from Brazil. You indicated that there didn't appear to be any strong social or economic impacts from the work that you'd done from the evaluation. Were you, in fact, able to look at what John talks about, hope and confidence? Was there any change in the individuals who participated in these programs in that respect?
So in the India study looked at measures of empowerment, and in that case, those are measured on whether or not the woman has more control over how money is spent in the household. So that was the way the questionnaire was designed to study empowerment. In the case of the Philippines, they did look at feelings of happiness, feelings of stress, different sort of more emotional type questions, and one significant, there weren't any significant results other that men who did receive a loan felt under more stress with credit, which also mirrored a result from a similar credit scoring experiment in South Africa. But clearly, I think continuing to include modules where you do look at empowerment is something that's happening pretty consistently in a number of other studies. There was another study in the Philippines that offered women a commitment savings program, so a program where they set a goal for savings and then put money into an account over time. And that study did find a significant impact on being able to save to a goal did change what happened in terms of decision making within the household.
I think probably to Brazil or maybe to Sophie. I was just wondering if there's been follow-up for those who took the loans after they paid back the loans. Do we know what happens over a longer period of time, or do they maintain their involvement in their micro-businesses? Is there any, what kind of follow-up occurs?
What we have seen is that after 5 to 8 cycles, some of them, the ones, well, once it's a group, some integrants of the group, they enhance their activities to the point that sometimes 4 years ago we started to invite them to get proper bank accounts in the retail branches. Therefore, they would be promoted to not be assisted by the microfinance. But it was a mistake, because when they went to there, they were becoming big to not be assisted by us once we were not prepared to assist them properly. But it, still, they are small enough not to be well assisted by the formal traditional banks. So this gap, what we started to do is to do microfinance in a very flexible way. I mean by flexible way, doing individual loans, and trying to address, this is still an experiment, but what we are trying to do is to assist these clients with other services that traditionally we do not use, we do not work in the normal microfinance operation. Well, regarding the, that's why we want to this to develop this measure, this impact, to see the impacts. And it's very easy to say that, okay, these clients, we are kind of the opening door for these clients for the bank. This is true in a sense that the bank is assessing them. But this is wrong to think that, okay, well, the next step is, okay, come to the retail. Yeah, I believe very much, and I think that's our opinion, that that's more to do with the microfinance being integrated into the retail. Because the way we assist these clients, the way we address them, is definitely different than the way, this ATM and just the mobile. There's some changes here. There is still a gap between this transaction, this transition. Yeah.
I have one question to the Planet Finance. As we know, the most difficult in the most country now is starting to go to Albania, for example, to set up a microfinance program there. We know the license to operate for microfinance, the legal structures, the legal framework for a micro bank is not done. You're working on such like this? This was a question to you. And I have another one question for you is what's concrete your key performance index on your, for you as a manager is done? How much is your ROSI? Your ROSI, return of capital invest. How you... As a manager, you have your KPI factors on the whole stuff. I would like to get know how you're driven by the capital cost. And a third command is, for me, as a German, to remind you, for me it's very strange to hear that we have so much unbanked people in Canada or unbanked people in the States. We have, since 140 years in Germany, by law, by Mr. Raiffeisen, the law is that every man, every people have to have a bank account. You know? So you lose the license to operate as a banker if it doesn't give a man not a bank account. So for us, it's very, it looks a very strange system what you build up, because every person have to have a bank account. This is a normal situation. So and this was done from a, it was not done by Yunus, it was done by a pastor 140 years ago. His name is Raiffeisen. It's now in Austria, it's in Switzerland, it's in Sweden, it's in Denmark, in Netherlands, in Germany. So maybe this is something where you can change your law inside Canada, because you're only 30 million people. So you can make an impact. In the States, maybe it's difficult, but Canada can move ahead with this.
Okay, regarding some KPIs, right? We invested about 12 million reais, which is 0.7 million Canadian dollars. Regarding bank accounts, just to mention, we do not, our clients in microfinance, they do not have bank accounts in the bank. That was a decision because of process. Yeah, we didn't want to confuse, to pollute the way you address our clients. Okay. Looking at the way we are set up in the bank and considering the processes, it's important to mention that we are not subsidized by the bank with all the, although we use the services. Today, one loan officer, to be sustainable, he has to have about 250 clients, which is well, the average loan for a client is it's the same, 0.5 thousand Canadian dollars, which is 1,100 reais. With the delinquency rate after one day of 8%, which when you go to... Well, it's can I answer your question later on, after talking to my colleague?
You have to understand.
Okay, just yeah.
Okay. I didn't hear the last part of your question about Albania and the regulation.
The question was the license to operate. We have a micro bank license. You know, most
right.
We have the most difficult in 200 nations. Then you can't open such a system like a micro bank, you know, because you have no deposit drive.
Right.
No.
So usually, I mean, what we've seen along the years is they usually start as non-profit organization. As they grow and they require to have access to savings. Savings is the backbone of microfinance. We're starting to see that because you have access to deposit, so your liquidity risk lowers. You know, the example is Lehman Brothers. They had no access to deposits. Okay, so it's, you really need that. What's happening is either the countries are regulating microfinance, and one of our business actually is advising countries on designing microfinance regulations, or and right now it's done. It's basically done country by country, which is very difficult to bring consistency throughout the industry standards, and especially capital requirement standards, provisions. To design also credit risk, credit standards. It's very difficult. So it's not only in Albania, it's everywhere. There's really a call to have global regulation. One of the two distinctions, there's a paper by SIGAP, I can give you the reference, is basically to design prudential regulations that are designed by governments to regulate microfinance, and prudential regulations have to do with capital structures, basically, and non-prudential regulations, and let microfinance institutions self-regulate on those issues, which are, you know, access to clients, consumer protection, that kind of issues. Does that answer your question, or...?
In the Grameen Bank, the breakthrough was 1983, when they get the bank license. You know, with the bank license, it's done. So many bank licenses in the world is like a big, big building, you know. But what the microcredit institutes want to do is a simple two-traffic jam, you know. It's they want to give credit and they want to have deposit. So, and is it on the way to form an example where it makes it easy, to, like in any country, to say, okay, this is a microbank and they have only this two traffic and is an example, and it makes it easy to give the license of operate in the country? That was my question. So if you have already one.
So to my knowledge, the definition of a commercial bank is the capability of accepting deposits. So as soon as you want to accept deposits, you have to go under banking regulation. I mean, American Express, which is not a bank, had to become a commercial bank to receive bailout money because bailout money could only go to commercial banks. And it's the same for microfinance. As soon as you want to tap into the savings market, you have to become a bank, regulated bank.
Thank you. Actually, I have a question for John. You had a short presentation, and you have the interesting wheels. I think the my question would be is, given we're talking about credit, access to credit was not part of your wheels. So there seem to be many other factors that determine what success or that. So, yeah, but I mean, if I were to rate that as a factor and try to rate the importance of factors from the people who go to see your services, what are, you know, what do you think is what's most needed, or in order of priorities?
Anecdotally, it's a business plan that then would have repercussions on the need for credit, but it's in our case, it's much more at a macro level than a micro level. Well, the amount of capital needed and the relationship with the bank is much more in our case, a traditional relationship than it is a micro relationship.
So, but the individuals who come and see you, do they need money for
how they
do their products?
Yes, they do.
Do you need 1,000, 2,000, 5,000, 10,000?
Yes, and we and our business coach guides them to those organizations and guides them in terms of the presentations that they need to make to those organizations in order to receive either grants or traditional credits, credit through BDC or through through the chartered banks.
Just to follow up, I wanted to know, in terms of the mentoring program, how easy is it to find for your mentorees people who are at the next phase, and how is it working?
It is working. We have 700 volunteers, which is a very impressive number in my mind. There is a turnover, but we're constantly looking for mentors. We're constantly, or in some cases, converting mentees into mentors, and we're constantly bringing into our networking events people who could qualify as mentors.
My question is a bit related to this and bit also related to some of the wheels that John was having. It seems that all the microfinance are working with the banking agent being at the household. You were talking about the same in Brazil. Grameen is doing this. Is Planet Finance also doing it? So my question is, what profile are you having currently in each of the three in terms of who is that animal that you are sending to the household, and to what extent there is kind of at the Grameen seems to have a very community oriented and individual empowerment approach. John, in his mentorship, is having a bit more of building entrepreneurship mindset, so that when you have reached the credit, the maximum of the credit of microfinance, maybe you are ready to start a small venture. So can you each talk about the way currently you view the role of your banking agent going there, how you train them, and how you can scale up what those key distribution agents may have in increasing the impact of microfinance?
Fabio, if you have the answer to that earlier question, please also you can.
Right. No, the earlier question is that it's Hans. Yeah, I expect that the answer is this correct. Although we'd like to check it, but it's 6% after inflation. That's the return on equity, right? Inflation in Brazil. Yeah. Well, regarding the question is. Well, first of all, we think that the loan officer is the worst in terms of toll to do this business, because it's custody, it's very expensive. But on the other hand, this is the key successful factor, and we spent 2 years honestly learning how to hire the best ones to work with this. Yeah, we tried the social studies guys. It was horrible because it's a business, and we found it difficultly to integrate them towards a model of business. But and also we tried the sell guys, you know, the ones that used to sell, and it was even worse. Yeah, today we know that it's more to do with the, first of all, this loan officer has to be very, first of all, has to enjoy talking and people, yeah, because they work with people. Secondly, most of them they have in their history some experience on working with these clients or working with this environment, and or in previous activities or as a voluntary job. So, but today, when looking ahead, what we see is that this has become more and more common. To especially in Brazil, when you see the low-income holders, I mean, this sector is becoming a great power of consumption, and you see today it's quite common to see even proper managers of the bank entering some favelas to address some particular clients. So I think that this and we see some other companies that wouldn't ever address these clients coming to hire our loan officers. So even for us, it's becoming quite critical to remain with us, to keep these loan officers in home. Yeah. So we believe that the future of microfinance has to do, yes, this client, this actor has to be still in the model. Yeah. Obviously, some tools are to be add to his job, to his day-to-day basis, but we do not see the future of operation without this personage.
So Planet Finance, it's microcred is our direct operations, and we operate in China, Senegal, Madagascar, and Mexico. I can't answer to the profile of the loan officers because I don't work directly for microcred, but I just want to make two comments to your question. The first one is, to scale up the model, we will have to use technology, and it's going to be interesting to measure the impact of technology. And the two technologies I'm thinking about are ATMs. We see SKS in India has been implementing ATMs in villages so that to make your loan payment, you go to the machine. What impact is that going to have on repayment rates when you don't talk to someone anymore? You just go to the ATM. The second piece of technology is mobile banking. It's taking like a bushfire in South Africa with M-Pesa, for instance. There are other programs. We're running one in Senegal. mobile banking, as it is understood right now, is beyond remittances and just making a payment. It's almost creating a new currency. So that's going to be also very interesting to see the impact of repayment rates. And the third thing, I would like to comment on what you said about the importance of loan officers and how they reach out to the community. We have a partnership with Pfizer in China to study the needs of our micro-entrepreneurs in terms of basic health care. And the reason why Pfizer came to see us, it's because we're the only ones who can give them access to those people. And we see those partnerships more and more frequently. We work with Sanofi Aventis in Burkina Faso on an AIDS micro-entrepreneur program also. So I think microfinance is really fascinating in the sense that we give access both ways, both to people who are in need of capital, but also of those companies who need to reach them out. And I'm not a fool. I know that they're looking at them in terms of market. And we're no fools about it. But it's very interesting because it would not have happened if the quality of the people working with micro-entrepreneurs wasn't there. They're committed, they're passionate, they're loyal, they're trustworthy. So I think these are the four qualities that we're basically looking for.
Just based on what you said, it's interesting because we have recently had approached by some huge companies such as Coca-Cola, Nestle, in Brazil, in order to bridge some partnerships where our loan officers can help them to enter in certain communities. And the difference when looking inside the bank, we see, well, the closest the manager of the bank, relationship manager, gets to his clients isn't really the same where our, you know, the loan officers at Grameen, you know, our microfinance, at least the ones that rely on the loan officer. Once the loan officer is in the house of these clients, they know the families, they know how many children they have, they know their behavior in terms of consumption. They're looking at the brands that they consume. So that's the richness of this method.
I think that's a really good point in terms of how social marketing can actually be an additional source of revenue in terms of the portfolio of microfinance institutions. One question I wanted to ask, Dalia, is in terms of qualitative versus quantitative data, how are researchers approaching both, and is there a bias towards going to quantitative data in terms of their analysis?
I just want to make sure that I understand the question. So you're talking about if you think the field is proceeding, the field of research on microcredit specifically is proceeding too much towards quantitative measures?
I'm just
okay.
How do you feel in terms of...
I think... I think among, I don't think that the two are mutually exclusive, and so sometimes it's hard to have the discussion about qualitative versus quantitative without talking about specific examples. But it's clear that that we need we need to have some way of measuring a counterfactual when we want to look at impact. But it may not be telling us the whole story, and that clearly integrating qualitative aspects and coming up with creative ways to do qualitative data collection is a very promising aspect of the research that's moving forward. Does that answer what you were asking? Oh, I absolutely think that there could be a better integration of qualitative data within in studies like these.
Okay, Laurette, you'll close.
Yeah. Well, I have two questions, in fact. I'd like to have Stephen talk about the profile and the training and that you give to the Grameen people who go to the bank. And then for closing, I want Fabio, for opening to the next session, to tell us what he did when you joined your microcredit division, that you almost broke it coming from retailing, and that may that would be, I think, a good transition for the next one.
Thank you. We have two levels of people working for us. We have the Grameen Bank managers who come from Bangladesh, who have 25 years or more experience running the model, the Grameen model. They're implementing that in our market. The center managers are people who do not have any, and this is by design, any banking experience. We are trying to get people who are involved in their community and have a desire to do some social good. There is some, I don't want to say they're Peace Corps type, but there is a little more Peace Corps in them than there is banker. And we believe that we can train these people to implement the model well, and if they don't have any preconceived judgment as to how to provide loans and how to find borrowers, they will do better in our program. They are not getting banker salaries. They are, I'm not going to say below market, but they are at a lower level. They have advancement programs, and we have one person who has been with us since we started in January 08. She will be finishing her second year. Next year she will be trained. Well, she's being trained now, but we think by the end of next year she will be able to be a branch manager, not with full lending authority, but will be able to do all the tasks, and the Bangladesh manager will be able to approve the loans. And maybe within 5 years she will be able to be a full branch manager. I don't think that's an unreasonable amount of time for them to get to that stage. Our program of growth is we have a commitment from the Grameen Bank to have a total of 10 branch managers come from Bangladesh. So we're up to three more coming, that's six. I think that will give us the ability to reach 150,000 customers with that team. I would love to talk to you further about the number of people you have. As you know, from my division, it looks like each of your employees is handling 400 borrowers. I think that's pretty aggressive, unless you're getting a lot of support from your bank. We don't think we can achieve that, although that is our goal as well. We think 300 is more in line.
Okay. First of all, it's important to mention that before I joined microcredit in the bank, I was familiar with the theme. Once I was in my master's, I did a dissertation. I did some travels and visited, had opportunity to visit some MFIs in South America, even in Africa. But yet, I mean, I wasn't familiar with the day-to-day, yeah? And I came with the experience of the retail, where the commercial emphasis is very aggressive, yeah? And what actually, the main discomfort of the regarding the area at that time, after 1 year, running the area, the bank running the area, was that you know, things were being too small, too calmly, too slow, and then the bank wanted, okay, well, let's push it up. I mean, we need this to be a business. We need the break even. We need to have the dynamic of a business, and that was the first mistake. Yeah, and I came with this sort of goal. Yeah, with this sort of target. And what we just realized is that let's go back to the principle. You know, let's go back to the basics. Yeah. And Axiom was with us, and it helped a lot because, you know, let's start from zero again. That's not problem. I mean, that's the price of the knowledge. Yeah. Of course, we were small enough not to be, you know, okay, let's drop this initiative out. So we took it as a rich opportunity of to learn how to do this in Brazil. We were aware at that time that some other initiatives failed in doing microfinance in Brazil. Yeah, and I myself think that to think about microfinance, you have to see, okay, how the banking environment is addressing also the low-income sector. We cannot just understand that, you know, do microfinance without having to account how the banks are treating this sector. So I think that was pretty much the lesson, and I think that that also shows the way the bank does business in general. Yeah, we do not have problems on having to start again. We do not have problems. Okay, the delinquency rate went up to almost 40%. Yeah, but we knew that. I mean, we were doing things wrongly. So let's go back to the basics. I wouldn't say that we read the bank, the book of Yunus again, but yes, we did. We did again a small group of a multidisciplinary group again to readdress what points we should have, we should be more conscious about. And thanks God, I gave, I was given the opportunity to restart again. So.
Thank you, Fabio, for showing us the power of failure to succeed in long term. So I'd like to thank all the speakers this morning. So, muito obrigado. Thank you, merci, and please enjoy your break.